Liar, Arya said. A hand clenched the blood orange so hard, the red juice squeezed between her fingers. Go ahead, call me all the names you want, Sansa said airily. You won't dare when I'm married to Joffrey. You'll have to bow to me and call me your grace. She shrieked as Arya flung the orange across the table. It caught her in the middle of the forehead with a wet squish and plopped down into her lap. You have juice on your face, your grace, Arya said. It was running down her nose and stinging her eyes. Sansa wiped it away with a napkin. When she saw what the fruit in her lap had done to her beautiful ivory silk dress, she shrieked again. You're horrible, she screamed at her sister. They should have killed you instead of Lady. Septa Mordain came lurching to her feet. Your lord father will hear of this. Go to your chambers at once, at once. Me too. Tears welled in Sansa's eyes. That's not fair. The matter is not subject to discussion. Go. Sansa stalked away with her head up. She was to be a queen, and queens did not cry. At least, not where people could see. When she reached her bedchamber, she barred the door and took off her dress. The blood orange had left a blotchy red stain on the silk. I hate her, she screamed. She balled up the dress and flung it into the cold hearth, on top of the ashes of last night's fire. When she saw that the stain had bled through onto her underskirt, she began to sob despite herself. She ripped off the rest of her clothes wildly, threw herself into bed, and cried herself back to sleep. It was midday when Septa Mordain knocked upon her door.
Sansa, your lord father will see you now.
Sansa sat up.
Lady,
she whispered. For a moment, it was as if the direwolf was there in the room, looking at her with those golden eyes, sad and knowing. She had been dreaming, she realized. Lady was with her, and they were running together, and trying to remember was like trying to catch the rain with her fingers. The dream faded, and Lady was dead again.
Sansa?
The rap came again, sharply.
Do you hear me?
Yes, Septa, she called out. Might I have a moment to dress, please? Her eyes were red from crying, but she did her best to make herself beautiful. Lord Eddard was bent over a huge leather-bound book when Septa Mordain marched her into the solar, his plaster-wrapped leg stiff beneath the table. Come here, Sansa, he said, not unkindly, when the scepter had gone for her sister. Sit beside me. He closed the book. Septa Mordain returned with Arya squirming in her grasp. Sansa had put on a lovely pale green damask gown and a look of remorse. But her sister was still wearing the ratty leathers and rough spin she'd worn at breakfast.
Here is the other one, the scepter announced.
My thanks, Septa Mordain. I would talk to my daughters alone, if you would be so kind. The scepter bowed and left.
Arya started it, Sansa said quickly, anxious to have the first word. She called me a liar and threw an orange at me and spoiled my dress. The ivory silk, the one Queen Cersei gave me when I was betrothed to Prince Joffrey. She hates that I'm going to marry the prince. She tries to spoil everything. Father, she can't stand for anything to be beautiful or nice or splendid.
Enough, Sansa. Lord Eddard's voice was sharp with impatience. Arya raised her eyes.
I'm sorry, Father. I was wrong, and I beg my sweet sister's forgiveness.
Sansa was so startled that for a moment she was speechless. Finally, she found her voice.
What about my dress? Maybe I could wash it.
Arya said doubtfully.
Washing won't do any good, Sansa said. Not if you scrubbed all day and all night. The silk is ruined. Then I'll make you a new one, Arya said.
Sansa threw back her head in disdain.
You couldn't sew a dress fit to clean the pigsties.
Their father sighed. I did not call you here to talk of dresses. I'm sending you both back to Winterfell. For the second time, Sansa found herself too stunned for words.
She felt her eyes grow moist again.
You can't,
Arya said. Please, father, Sansa managed at last. Please don't. Eddard Stark favored his daughters with a tired smile. At last we've found something you agree on.
I didn't do anything wrong, Sansa pleaded with him. I don't want to go back.
She loved King's Landing, the pageantry of the court, the high lords and ladies in their velvets and silks and gemstones, the great city with all its people. The tournament had been the most magical time of her whole life, and there was so much she had not yet seen, harvest feasts and masked balls and mummer shows. She could not bear the thought of losing it all.
Send Arya away. She started it, father. I swear it. I'll be good, you'll see. Just let me stay, and I promise to be as fine and noble and courteous as the queen.
Father's mouth twitched strangely. Sansa, I'm not sending you away for fighting, though the guards know I'm sick of you two squabbling. I want you back in Winterfall for your own safety. Three of my men were cut down like dogs, not a league from where we sit. And what does Robert do? He goes hunting. Arya was chewing at her lip in that disgusting way she had.
Can we take Syria back with us?
Who cares about your stupid dancing master? Sansa flared.
Father, I only just now remembered I can't go away. I'm to marry Prince Joffrey.
She tried to smile bravely for him.
I love him, father. I truly, truly do. I love him as much as Queen Nerys loved Prince Aemon, the Dragon Knight, as much as Jonquil loves Sir Florian. I want to be his queen and have his babies.
Sweet one, her father said gently, listen to me. When you're old enough, I will make you a match with a high lord who's worthy of you, someone brave and gentle and strong. This match with Joffrey was a terrible mistake. That boy is no Prince Aemon. You must believe me.
He is, Sansa insisted. I don't want someone brave and gentle. I want him. We'll be ever so happy, just like in the songs, you'll see. I'll give him a son with golden hair, and one day he'll be the king of all the realm, the greatest king that ever was, as brave as the wolf and as proud as the lion.
Arya made a face.
Not if Joffrey's his father, she said. He's a liar and a craven. And anyhow, he's a stag, not a lion.
Sansa felt tears in her eyes.
He is not. He's not the least bit like that old drunken king.
She screamed at her sister, forgetting herself in her grief.
Father looked at her strangely. Guards, he swore softly, out of the mouths of babes.
He shouted for Septa Mordain. To the girls, he said, I'm looking for a fast-trading galley to take you home. These days, the sea is safer than the King's Road. You will sail as soon as I can find a proper ship with Septa Mordain and a complement of guards, and yes, with Syrio Forel, if he agrees to enter my service. But say nothing of this. It's better if no one knows of our plans. We will talk again tomorrow. Sansa cried as Septa Mordain marched them down the steps. They were going to take it all away. The tournaments and the court and her prince, everything. They were going to send her back to the bleak grey walls of Winterfell and lock her up forever. Her life was over before it had begun.
Stop that weeping, child,
Septa Mordain said sternly.
I am certain your lord father knows what's best for you.
It won't be so bad, Sansa, Arya said.
We're going to sail on a galley. It'll be an adventure. And then we'll be with Bran and Rob again, and old Nan, and Hodor and the rest.
She touched her on the arm.
Hodor! Sansa yelled. You ought to marry Hodor. You're just like him, stupid and hairy and ugly.
She wrenched away from her sister's hand, stormed into her bedchamber, and barred the door behind her. Eddard.
Pain is a gift from the gods, Lord Eddard, Grand Maester Pycelle told him. It means the bone is knitting, the flesh healing itself. Be thankful.
I will be thankful when my leg stops throbbing.
Pycelle set a stoppered flask on the table by the bed. The milk of the poppy, for when the pain grows too onerous.
I sleep too much already,
Sleep is the great healer. I had hoped that was you. Pycelle smiled wanly. It is good to see you in such a fierce humor, my lord. He leaned close and lowered his voice. There was a raven this morning, a letter for the queen from her lord father. I thought you had best know.
Dark wings, dark words, Ned said grimly. What of it?
Lord Tywin is greatly wroth about the men you sent after Sir Gregor Clegane, the maester confided. I feared he would be. You will recall, I said as much in council.
Let him be wroth, Ned said. Every time his leg throbbed, he remembered Jaime Lannister's smile and Jorry dead in his arms. Let him write all the letters to the queen he likes. Lord Beric rides beneath the king's own banner. If Lord Tywin attempts to interfere with the king's justice, he will have Robert to answer to. The only thing his grace enjoys more than hunting is making war on lords who defy him. Pycelle pulled back, his maester's chain jangling.
As you say, I shall visit again on the morrow.
The old man hurriedly gathered up his things and took his leave. Ned had little doubt that he was bound straight for the royal apartments to whisper at the queen.
I thought you had best know.
Indeed. As if Cersei had not instructed him to pass along her father's threats. He hoped his response rattled those perfect teeth of hers. Ned was not near as confident of Robert as he pretended, but there was no reason Cersei need know that. When Pycelle was gone, Ned called for a cup of honeyed wine. That clouded the mind as well, yet not as badly. He needed to be able to think. A thousand times he asked himself what John Arryn might have done had he lived long enough to act on what he'd learned. Or perhaps he had acted and died for it. It was clear how sometimes a child's innocent eyes can see things that grown men are blind to. Someday, when Sansa was grown, he would have to tell her how she had made it all come clear for him. He's not the least bit like that old drunken king, she had declared, angry and unknowing, and the simple truth of it had twisted inside him cold as death. This was the sword that killed John Arryn, Ned thought then, and it will kill Robert as well. A slower death, but full as certain. Shattered legs may heal in time, but some betrayals fester and poison the soul. Littlefinger came calling an hour after the Grand Maester had left, clad in a plum-coloured doublet with a mockingbird embroidered on the breast in black thread and a striped cloak of black and white.
I cannot visit long, my lord, he announced. Lady Tanda expects me to lunch with her. No doubt she will roast me a fatted calf. If it's near as fatted as her daughter, I'm likely to rupture and die. And how is your leg?
Inflamed and painful, with an itch that is driving me mad. Littlefinger lifted an eyebrow.
In future, try not to let any horses fall on it. I would urge you to heal quickly. The realm grows restive. Varys has heard ominous whispers from the west. Free riders and sellswords have been flocking to Casterly Rock, and not for the thin pleasure of Lord Tywin's conversation.
Is there word of the king? Ned demanded. Just how long does Robert intend to hunt?
Given his preferences, I believe he'd stay in the forest until you and the queen both die of old age, Lord Petyr replied with a faint smile. Lacking that, I imagine he'll return as soon as he's killed something. They found the White Hart, it seems, or rather, what remained of it. Some wolves found it first, and left his grace scarcely more than a hoof and a horn. Robert was in a fury, until he heard talk of some monstrous boar deep in the forest. Then nothing would do but that he must have it. Prince Joffrey returned this morning with the Royces, Sir Balin Swan, and some 20 others of the party. The rest are still with the king.
The Hound, Ned asked, frowning. Of all the Lannister party, Sandor Clegane was the one who concerned him the most, now that Sir Jaime had fled the city to join his father.
Oh, returned with Joffrey, and went straight to the queen,
Littlefinger smiled. I would have given 100 silver stags to have been a roach in the rushes when he learned that Lord Berwick was off to behead his brother. Even a blind man could see the hound loathed his brother.
Ah, but Gregor was his to loathe, not yours to kill.
Once Dondarrion lops the summit off our mountain, the Clegane lands and income will pass to Sandor. But I wouldn't hold my water waiting for his thanks, not that one. And now you must forgive me. Lady Atanda awaits with her fatted calves. On the way to the door, Lord Petar spied Grand Maester Malian's massive tome on the table and paused to idly flip open the cover. The lineages and histories of the great houses of the Seven Kingdoms, with descriptions of many high lords and noble ladies and their children, he read. Now, there is tedious reading, if ever I saw it. A sleeping potion, my lord? For a brief moment, Ned considered telling him all of it. But there was something in Littlefinger's japes that irked him. The man was too clever by half, a mocking smile never far from his lips. John Aaron was studying this volume when he was taken sick, Ned said in a careful tone, to see how he might respond. And he responded, as he always did, with a quip. In that case, he said, death must have come as a blessed relief. Lord Petar Baelish bowed and took his leave. Eddard Stark allowed himself a curse. Aside from his own retainers, there was scarcely a man in the city he trusted. Littlefinger had concealed Catelyn and helped Ned in his inquiries, yet his haste to save his own skin, when Jaime and his swords had come out of the rain, still rankled. Varys was worse. For all his protestations of loyalty, the eunuch knew too much and did too little. Grand Maester Pycelle seemed more Cersei's creature with every passing day, and Sir Barristan was an old man and rigid. He would tell Ned to do his duty. Time was perilously short. The king would return from his hunt soon, and honor would require Ned to go to him with all he had learned. Vaon Poole had arranged for Sansa and Arya to sail on the Windwitch out of Braavos, 3 days hence. They would be back at Winterfell before the harvest. Ned could no longer use his concern for their safety to excuse his delay. Yet last night he had dreamed of Rhaegar's children. Lord Tywin had laid the bodies beneath the Iron Throne, wrapped in the crimson cloaks of his house guard. That was clever of him. The blood did not show so badly against the red cloth. The little princess had been barefoot, still dressed in her bedgown, and the boy. Ned could not let that happen again. The realm could not withstand a second mad king, another dance of blood and vengeance. He must find some way to save the children. Robert could be merciful. Sir Barristan was scarcely the only man he had pardoned. Grand Maester Pycelle, Varys the Spider, Lord Balon Greyjoy, each had been counted an enemy to Robert once, and each had been welcomed into friendship and allowed to retain honors and office for a pledge of fealty. So long as a man was brave and honest, Robert would treat him with all the honor and respect due to a valiant enemy. There was something else. Poison in the dark, a knife thrust to the soul. This he could never forgive, no more than he had forgiven Rhaegar. He will kill them all, Ned realized. And yet, he knew he could not keep silent. He had a duty to Robert, to the realm, to the shade of John Aaron, and to Bran, who surely must have stumbled on some part of the truth. Why else would they have tried to slay him? Late that afternoon, he summoned Tomar, the portly guardsman with the ginger-colored whiskers his children called Fat Tom. Were Jory dead and Alan gone, Fat Tom had command of his household guard. The thought filled Ned with vague disquiet. Tomar was a solid man, affable, loyal, tireless, capable in a limited way, but he was near 50, and even in his youth he had never been energetic. Perhaps Ned should not have been so quick to send off half his guard and all his best swords among them. I shall require your help, Ned said, when Tomard appeared, looking faintly apprehensive, as he always did when called before his lord. Take me to the Guardswood.
Is that wise, Lord Eddard, with your leg and all?
Perhaps not, but necessary. Tomard summoned Varley. With one arm around each man's shoulder, Ned managed to descend the steep tower steps and hobble across the bailey. I want the guard doubled, he told Fat Tom. No one enters or leaves the Tower of the Hand without my leave. Tom blinked.
My lord, with Alan and the others away, we're hard-pressed already.
It will only be a short while. Lengthen the watches.
As you say, my lord, Tom answered. Might I ask why?
Best not, Ned answered crisply. The Guardswood was empty, as it always was here in the Citadel of the Southern Gods. Ned's leg was screaming as they lowered him to the grass beside the heart tree.
Thank you.
He drew a paper from his sleeve, sealed with the sigil of his house. Kindly deliver this at once. Tomard looked at the name Ned had written on the paper and licked his lips anxiously.
My lord,
do as I bid you, Tom, Ned said. How long he waited in the quiet of the Guardswood, he could not say. It was peaceful here. The thick wall shut out the clamor of the castle, and he could hear birds singing, the murmur of crickets, leaves rustling in a gentle wind. The heart tree was an oak, brown and faceless. Yet Ned Stark still felt the presence of his guards. His leg did not seem to hurt so much. She came to him at sunset, as the clouds reddened above the walls and towers. She came alone, as he had bid her. For once she was dressed simply, in leather boots and hunting greens. When she drew back the hood of her brown cloak, he saw the bruise where the king had struck her. The angry plum color had faded to yellow, and the swelling was down, but there was no mistaking it for anything but what it was. Why here? Cersei Lannister asked, as she stood over him. So the guards can see. She sat beside him on the grass. Her every move was graceful. Her curling blonde hair moved in the wind, and her eyes were green as the leaves of summer. It had been a long time since Ned Stark had seen her beauty, but he saw it now. I know the truth John Aaron died for, he told her. Do you? The queen watched his face, wary as a cat. Is that why you call me here, Lord Stark? To pose me riddles? Or is it your intent to seize me as your wife seized my brother? If you truly believe that, you would never have come. Ned touched her cheek gently. Has he done this before? Once or twice. She shied away from his hand. Never on the face before. Jaime would have killed him, even if it meant his own life. Cersei looked at him defiantly. My brother is worth 100 of your friend. Your brother, Ned said, or your lover? Both. She did not flinch from the truth. Since we were children together, and why not? The Targaryens wed brother to sister for 300 years to keep the bloodlines pure. And Jaime and I are more than brother and sister. We are one person in two bodies. We shared a womb together. He came into this world holding my foot, our old maester said. When he is in me, I feel whole. The ghost of a smile flitted over her lips. My son Bran. To her credit, Cersei did not look away. He saw us. You love your children, do you not? Robert had asked him the very same question, the morning of the melee. He gave her the same answer. With all my heart. No less do I love mine. Ned thought, if it came to that, the life of some child I did not know against Rob and Sansa and Arya and Bran and Rickon, what would I do? Even more so, what would Catelyn do if it were John's life against the children of her body? He did not know. He prayed he never would. All three are Jaime's, he said. It was not a question. Thank the gods. The seed is strong. John Aaron had cried on his deathbed, and so it was. All those bastards, all with hair as black as night. Grand Maester Malion recorded the last mating between Stag and Lion some 90 years ago, when Tyre Lannister wed Gowan Baratheon, third son of the reigning lord. Their only issue, an unnamed boy, described in Malion's tome as a large and lusty lad born with a full head of black hair, died in infancy. 30 years before that, a male Lannister had taken a Baratheon maid to wife. She had given him 3 daughters and a son, each black-haired. No matter how far back Ned searched in the brittle yellowed pages, always he found the gold yielding before the coal.
12 years, Ned said.
How is it that you have had no children by the king? She lifted her head, defiant. Your Robert got me with child once, she said, her voice thick with contempt. My brother found a woman to cleanse me. He never knew. If truth be told, I can scarcely bear for him to touch me, and I have not let him inside me for years. I know other ways to pleasure him when he leaves his whores long enough to stagger up to my bedchamber. Whatever we do, the king is usually so drunk that he's forgotten it all by the next morning. How could they have all been so blind? The truth was there in front of them all the time, written on the children's faces. Ned felt sick. I remember Robert as he was the day he took the throne. Every inch a king, he said quietly. 1,000 other women might have loved him with all their hearts. What did he do to make you hate him so? Her eyes burned, green fire in the dusk, like the Linus that was her sigil. The night of our wedding feast, the first time we shared a bed, he called me by your sister's name. He was on top of me, in me, stinking of wine, and he whispered, Lyanna. Ned Stark thought of pale blue roses, and for a moment he wanted to weep. I do not know which of you I pity most. The Queen seemed amused by that. Save your pity for yourself, Lord Stark. I want none of it. You know what I must do.
Must?
She put her hand on his good leg just above the knee. A true man does what he will, not what he must. Her fingers brushed lightly against his thigh, the gentlest of promises. The realm needs a strong hand. Joff will not come of age for years. No one wants war again, least of all me. Her hand touched his face, his hair. If friends can turn to enemies, enemies can become friends. Your wife is 1,000 leagues away, and my brother has fled. Be kind to me, Ned. I swear to you, you shall never regret it.
Did you make the same offer to John Eyre as a badge of honor? Ned said dryly.
Honor? She spat. How dare you play the noble lord with me? What do you take me for? You've a bastard of your own. I've seen him. Who was the mother, I wonder? Some Dornish peasant you raped while her holdfast burned? A whore? Or was it the grieving sister, the Lady Ashara? She threw herself into the sea, I'm told. Why was that? For the brother you slew? Or the child you stole? Tell me, my honorable Lord Eddard, how are you any different from Robert or me or Jamie?
For a start, said Ned, I do not kill children.
You'd do well to listen, my lady. I shall say this only once. When the king returns from his hunt, I intend to lay the truth before him. You must be gone by then, you and your children, all three, and not to Casterly Rock. If I were you, I should take ship for the free cities, or even farther, to the Summer Isles or the port of Ibben, as far as the winds blow.
Exile, she said. A bitter cup to drink from.
A sweeter cup than your father served Rhaegar's children, Ned said, and kinder than you deserve. Your father and your brothers would do well to go with you. Lord Tywin's gold will buy you comfort and hire swords to keep you safe. You shall need them. I promise you, no matter where you flee, Robert's wrath will follow you, to the back of beyond if need be. The Queen stood. And what of my wrath, Lord Stark? She asked softly.
Her eyes searched his face. You should have taken the realm for yourself. It was there for the taking. Jaime, tell me how you found him on the Iron Throne the day King's Landing fell and made him yield it up. That was your moment. All you needed to do was climb those steps and sit. Such a sad mistake. I have made more mistakes than you can possibly imagine, Ned said. But that was not one of them.
Oh, but it was, my lord, Cersei insisted. When you play the Game of Thrones, you win or you die. There is no middle ground. She turned up her hood to hide her swollen face and left him there in the dark, beneath the oak, amidst the quiet of the guard's wood, under a blue-black sky. The stars were coming out. Daenerys. The heart was steaming in the cool evening air when Khal Drogo set it before her, raw and bloody. His arms were red to the elbow. Behind him, his blood riders knelt on the sand beside the corpse of the wild stallion, stone knives in their hands. The stallion's blood looked black in the flickering orange glare of the torches that ringed the high chalk walls of the pit.